Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Happy New Year. Welcome to our first show of 2025. We are 25 years into what I guess you can't call the new millennium anymore. But, you know, for those of us who were around in years that started with 19, it still feels like the new millennium. At any rate, we're going to bring you into the new year by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
I got a couple things I want to hit all in one little beat here before we get the show started, because we do have a lot of things to discuss. First and foremost, our hearts and sympathy go out to everyone that was affected in the French Quarter over the New Year's Eve celebration that should have been positive and a good time for everybody, but you got feelings? You want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's only so much you can say. Of course, it's terrible, and like you said, heart goes out. And, you know, New Orleans being so close to us here in Pensacola, you know, I think all of us at some point or another go over there for, you know, a night here, a couple of days there, whatever. So, you know, it feels like kind of a home away from home to us.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much of a shared culture between New Orleans and Pensacola. And you can see it in things like architecture and food. And yeah, so yeah, it hits close to home. And I don't know what else to say. I don't really feel like this is a situation where anybody didn't do their job or anything. I don't think there's much you could have done to control this. I'm not real happy with people that are trying to jump on this to capitalize for political points. This is not a political show. We're not going to talk about it. But you know who you are and you know what you did.
Yeah, it's impossible to transition from that into more upbeat stuff in a way that feels natural. But we did just want to kind of take a moment to, you know, send our condolences and let everybody know our thoughts are with them. Switching gears into the stuff that we typically do talk about, I just finished, I'm in the very, very last phases of finishing a documentary that's going to be screening at Pensacon. Julio, you got to check it out a little before it was ready.
I did. I'm looking forward to people seeing it, Jeremy. You know, I'm not one to blow smoke. You know that. But I think you did a great job with it. I think, you know, it's a fun movie. It's about pinball. If Jeremy did, I don't think Jeremy said that. You know, really shows, you know, some of the love, and it kind of focuses on a pinball club here in the Pensacola area that, that Jeremy's a part of, and that I know a few other people that are a part of as well. And, you know, I've been invited to that once or twice. I need to go at some point.
You really ought to.
Yeah. But you know, it's a really fun little documentary. It's going to be screened at Pensacon out of competition during our film festival at Pensacon, which is just 6 weeks away, by the way, if you can believe it. Tickets available at Pensacon.com right now. Make sure you check it out. Check out the website and see all the great guests we've got coming, all the great stuff we got coming up. I'm very much beyond hip deep in Pensacon at this point, and more like it's coming up on my neck at this point.
I imagine so.
But yeah, you know, it's a fun little film, Jeremy. I think you've done a great job with it, and I'm looking forward to people seeing it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I also wanted to mention something that got kind of big news over the last couple of days in particular. If you are keeping up with the series Creature Commandos, then you no doubt saw the last episode and are very aware that we got our first peek at the new the DCU iteration of the Batman. Julio, what do you think?
Man, so this was made such a big freaking deal on the internet.
I got a text from Julio 10:30 on Thursday night.
Yeah, literally, because I'd seen the same news. I hadn't seen the episode yet, but I'd seen the news on the internet saying, hey, man, it looks like they debuted Batman and the new episode of Creature Commandos. We got to make sure we watch it before the show so we can talk about it, because, Yeah, I figured it's the way that the internet was exploding about it. This is a big deal. And you obviously, this is a major keystone character of the DCU that we're looking forward to see James Gunn put us and company put their spin on. And I figured, you know, I figured it was going to be small. I figured it was going to be probably not any speaking lines in it because we hadn't heard any casting news. You know, they are planning a separate from the Matt Reeves Batman movies because that's a separate universe. And that next one has been pushed back another year now. We know that there is a Batman and Robin film in development for the DCU proper. So there is going to be a Batman cast in the DCU. Hadn't been any casting news out yet, so I figured, okay, they're going to show him, but he's not going to speak. Cool. And I was right. That's exactly what happened.
Right.
You know, but, you know, checked out the episode. Another great episode of the show. If you're not watching this show, you absolutely should be. Not only is this, you know, kind of building the basis for what we're going to see, starting with the Superman film that's coming out in June and continuing throughout film and television and animation and gaming projects for the next however long it lasts, you know, hopefully very, very long and very successfully like the MCU has been. So, you know, when you get the notion that they're going to debut a major character, you get excited about that. And I think people did get excited about that. Episode's great. It focuses on Dr. Phosphorus, who was traditionally a Batman villain. So, again, makes sense to have Batman in this episode. And Batman is in this episode.
Just tell us what you think about it.
I hope you didn't blink, because if you did, you probably missed it. Because Batman is in this episode for, I think, less than 2 seconds.
Like as long as the lightning strike lasts, that's how long he's in it.
It's like, you know that bit at the beginning of Batman the Animated Series where he's standing on the rooftop in shadow and then lightning strikes and you see him in full color for a second?
I've heard of it.
It was kind of like that, except you could see less of him than that. It's basically just a silhouette of Batman. You can't even really make out any details of the costume or anything like that. It's like, well, you know, if you're going to say that's the debut, then last week's episode where we had the prophecy of Cersei that we got to see through Amanda Waller's eyes, where you saw all the superheroes dead and dying. Well, then there was our debut of, you know, Superman and Wonder Woman and, you know, some of the Teen Titans. And yet, dude, like, we don't have to have the hype train. Like, we're here for it. You know,
there's so much iconography associated with Batman. He's got a cape, he's got a cowl, he's got the ears. He's, you know, and that's about it. I feel like James Gunn even came out and afterwards and was basically like, look, we didn't want to commit to anything, so we didn't show you the character, and that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. Like I said, it makes sense to tie Dr. Phosphorus to Batman. He was originally created as a Batman villain. So it makes some sense. I really enjoyed the story. Alan Tudyk, of course, knocking it out of the park. And very interesting that when they showed the flashbacks for that character to before he was transformed into basically a walking nuclear skeleton, the way they drew him, he looks exactly like Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like dead on accurate depiction of what Alan Tudyk looks like. You know, tragic story. We got to see another great Batman I don't know if you call him a villain, but certainly an enemy, Rupert Thorne, one of the big crime bosses in Gotham City, got to see him on camera. He was also a major antagonist in Batman the Animated Series and played very similarly to how he was played in Batman the Animated Series. And you know what? Honestly, if Gunn's going to make his Batman corner of the universe just live action Batman the Animated Series, here for it. All freaking day long. Absolutely. I mean, that is probably the best depiction of Batman in any medium. So, you know.
All right, I'll take it.
You know, if you're going to, I mean, unfortunately, Kevin Conroy is no longer with us. And even if he were, he'd probably be a little old to play the character in live action. But, you know, Kevin Conroy is the Batman. So, you know, if you're going to base the live action Batman on the Kevin Conroy Batman, here for it all day long. But yeah. Let's slow down on the hype. I know that's what you do, but let's make it our New Year's resolution. We're going to do better on that kind of stuff. We're going to take a break. Back in more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
just one question. And yeah, God is great. Yeah, God is good. Yeah. What if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on the bus, trying to make his way home.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube. Jeremy, what if God was one of us? You know, I mean, is in a way, isn't that kind of the question that is answered by season 3 of What If on Disney Plus?
Yeah, very much.
I mean, it kind of is. It kind of is.
Yeah.
Like the overarching theme of this season of the show is the Watcher finding humanity. Spoilers, I guess I should say, because this whole series, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about this season of What If, to be completely honest with you, Jeremy.
Like, let's talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, second year in a row where they've done this strategy of dumping the episodes over the holidays a day at a time instead of, you know, a weekly release or, you know, like, you know, it's like, over the course of a period of time when people are watching the least television and they're going to dump them out a day at a time. So it's made it hard for like everybody to keep up with it. And it's just like, it's almost like they're relegating this. And it's been overall a good series. They've also made very clear that this is it. They're not doing it anymore after this season, which I think is a shame because where What If has its biggest strength, at least as a comics title, is the unpredictability of what could happen in any given episode and that it's always taking an alternate look at something that actually happened in the comics. The way they've done it in this series has not always been that. There's been a lot of, hey, what if? But it wasn't like, you know, hey, one little thing happened different in Ant-Man and the Wasp, and this is how that story would have gone if that one thing went different.
Not at all.
Yeah. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. I actually think where this worked best in this season is when we got to follow up on previous episodes of this series. And then
yeah.
I think...
I agree.
I think there were a few this season that they did that it's just like... Okay, I get that was a fun idea, but why? And you know, there wasn't the kind of build through this season to an ultimate conclusion of the season the way there was in previous season. There was a little, and we had, you know, the climax in the last two episodes, but you really only saw that in like other than one or two elements in like the last four episodes, three or four episodes of the season. Out of eight. So we had things thrown in there, like we had this episode where, the Hulk became a kaiju and spawned other kaiju and the Avengers became, you know, Voltron, basically.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And?
Yeah.
We had...
It was very, like, 2014 Godzilla, Pacific Rim, Neon Evangelion, Power Rangers... imagery all thrown into one pot, and I kind of enjoyed it, but not great.
It was fun enough as a one-off, but it had no bearing on anything.
So aren't you kind of saying two things that, like, okay, because in my mind, What If is an anthology, can be like a Twilight Zone anthology, but that doesn't serve a greater narrative, so it kind of is trying to have its cake and eat it too?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And then there are things that, you know, one of the best episodes of the season, and I'm going to kind of contradict myself on what I'm saying here, though, is the Agatha Harkness episode. you know, we have this episode where Agatha Harkness, instead of following the path that she's followed through, you know, the media that we've seen into WandaVision and Agatha all along, she decides in the 1940s that the way to power is to become a movie star. And she's using this movie star status to tap into, again, playing off maybe not the most popular Marvel movie that was out there, but playing off of what happened in the Eternals. She discovered the Eternals sleeping within the Earth's core, and she's trying to tap that power. And I think it starts out from a Agatha power hungry standpoint, but she becomes, you know, comes to the point where she realizes, hey, this is my planet.
Yeah.
And I need a place to live, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then she uses that power, and then she ends up teaming up with Kingu from the Eternals. And it was a really fun episode that played on like the old Hollywood. We got to see, Dominic Cooper back as Howard Stark.
Howard.
We got to see James Darcy back as Jarvis. And that was a lot of fun. And we got to play with all those. And it was a great episode. And where it left you at the end was with this character that absolutely should have been part of Captain Carter's squad, you know, all-girl squad at the end.
Sure.
Like, why is Agatha not part of that team? And yet,
you know,
we never see anything of her again.
Yeah. No, that's actually something I didn't consider, and it would have served that, like there is a greater narrative that's been building through all these seasons, and that would have worked to kind of tie things together further. I think it had highs and lows, and I think that's true of everything, but one of the things I think it did really well is reintroduce us to Phase 4 characters in a way that I thought was, like, enjoyable.
I appreciated that, but I think that we also had an issue with that too, because it became very much a who is that again? Like especially with Lin Yang, the who was the Michelle Yao character in Shang-Chi. Like, it took me a minute, because Michelle Yao didn't return to voice the character. It took me a minute to figure out who she was.
What was your favorite of the episodes?
I think hands down, it is the Howard the Duck and Darcy getting hitched. And
really?
Yes, it was so much fun.
Okay.
That episode was so much fun. It did have bearing on things that came later. It was a sequel to a season one episode, because it was you know, the aftermath of the Party Thor episode. And I just, you know, love Seth Green, love Kat Dennings. You know, and we had so many other characters from the Marvel Cinematic Universe in that episode, including so many like big names coming back to voice their characters. It was super fun. And the fact
mine was the Red Guardian and Winter Soldier,
which was also super
ahead
fun.
Of the others.
Also super fun. The fact that also that episode led to us getting Natasha Lyonne in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
I ain't going to complain about that either. Then, you know, also like the two climactic episodes, getting to see Storm in the MCU.
Very cool.
Very cool also. I think it was kind of disjointed. The other thing I think it suffered for with regard to that whole season four thing is you could kind of see some of the holes. You could kind of see where, hey, we really thought people were going to respond better to the Eternals than they did.
Yeah,
because you had two episodes.
Or is it retconning it and trying to ingratiate us to it in retrospect?
I don't think it was that. I don't think this is a Thor: The Dark World situation. I think,
okay.
I also think that this was in progress much earlier, because I think the other place that it really suffers, and it's an otherwise really strong episode. I really do love the Shang-Chi Kate Bishop Old West episode. It's a lot. It's a lot of fun. But you can tell, and with that and with the Emergence Destroyed the Earth episode, they expected Ironheart to have been out months ago. They expected you to have more of a relationship with Riri Williams than we did at that point. Because remember, we've seen of Riri Williams is the little bit in Wakanda Forever. Like, I had to remind my wife who she was. My wife hasn't seen everything, but she did see that movie and she didn't remember the character. because the series the series was supposed to, you know, the series has been on the shelf for a year.
I didn't know that.
So I think, you know, they were relying on, hey, everybody's going to love Ironheart by now. Same thing with the Hood being the villain of the Shang-Chi episode. The Hood's going to be the villain in Ironheart.
I didn't realize
so
that.
So instead of us having been introduced to this concept already, it's this episode of What If that's introducing us to this concept, if you don't already know it from the comics. So, you know, I can see where the seams are in this. And maybe some of this is because I follow this stuff too closely and I know, you know, all the news. But I also think that, you know, that means that the audience hasn't had a chance to connect with these characters. And this show is very reliant on you already having connected with these characters in another form.
See, and I felt the other way without the insight that, oh, actually, this is a way to get us more familiarized and connected with these characters that we've only seen in, like, fleeting glances up to this point.
I think that that's fair when you're talking about somebody like Shang-Chi that was well-established.
Sure.
Or Kate Bishop, or, you know, one of those characters that we've seen in a full-length feature or in a series. Agatha. You know, Agatha's been in two series now, but, you know, even Kingu, I think, is fair game in that regard. You know, he was in a full-length feature, even though he was one of about 947 characters
in a
feature that should have probably been a series. But yeah, I mean, I think the series, this season overall was rocky. I did think it came to a good climax at the end. And overall, I think this series has been great, and I'm going to miss it. I wish they weren't making this, what I think is a short-sighted decision to end it. And maybe it's because they're just trying to get away from the whole multiverse thing. But when What If originated as a comic, it wasn't really about it being a multiverse thing anyway. It was just very much a, hey, this is a non-continuity story. What if, you know, what if the Fantastic Four had been different people? What if Gwen Stacy had lived? What if, you know, things like that, you know. That's the root of this series. That's what I loved about the series. Hate to see it end, though, and I hate to say that this segment's going to end, but we do have to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, we talked a little bit last week when we went last week and last year when we went over our best movies of 2024 about the movie Nosferatu, which made my top 10 list for the year, but you had not seen it yet. And you have seen it now, and I know you really wanted to talk about it a little bit. So tell me what you thought of the movie.
Yeah, I couldn't resist. Robert Eggers is just one of those filmmakers who he hasn't left a long lasting impression yet, because his first film, The Witch, came out probably in, kind of guessing here, let's say 2017, so somewhere between like 2016 and 2018. And since then, he's released a couple of others. He did The Lighthouse, he did The Northman, and now he has released Nosferatu. And I'm a really big mark for vampire literature. You know, I've read all the Vampire Chronicles, Bram Stoker's Dracula is one of my favorite novels. Love I actually love Francis Ford Coppola's 1992 adaptation of Dracula. Leading up to Nosferatu, I watched the 1922 film again, and I, for the first time, watched Werner Herzog's movie. Expectations can often be the thief of joy, and I had such high hopes for Nosferatu. I'd be lying to say I wasn't a little let down, and I feel like that's kind of the vibe that you had. Is that fair?
I do think that's fair, actually, in thinking about it. Like, I have been kind of a Robert Eggers fanboy as well, and like I just had it in my head that this was going to be like one of my top movies of the year, and it was, but like at sneaking in at the bottom end of that spectrum rather than being like near the top, like I figured it would be. It is very good. I do think it's a little slow. Apparently, yeah. We got a director's cut coming at some point that's going to be like 3 hours long, which I'm not necessarily convinced that more length is what this movie needs.
Like, I understand that and push back a little bit because it's interesting. So this is a film that I'm of two minds of, and part of it is that it feels like very methodical in its pacing, but every single moment of screen time is used to drive the story forward. So maybe with a little bit more room to breathe, we can feel a little more emotionally connected to these characters. And this is where I come to the of two minds part, is because like, you can look at this movie and understand that everything is so meticulously crafted, and everybody turns in uniformly fantastic performances. It's been said often that Lily Rose Depp is just, she's great in this movie, but yet I'm kept at an emotional distance, and I feel like Eggers is one of those guys, similar to Nolan, similar to Villeneuve, who just like, top of their craft, but for some reason have a hard time making their characters feel human. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, but I mean, I think I had more of an emotional connection with, say, Anya Taylor-Joy's character in The Witch, or Robert Pattinson's character in The Lighthouse.
That is fair. Yeah. Okay, so if we were to have taken Anya Taylor-Joy and put her in this film, do you think it would have been a more emotionally rich experience just on that alone?
I don't know. And of course, you know, as you may know, I know Jeremy knows that Anya Taylor-Joy was the original casting for this role, and then something happened. She wasn't able to do it.
Mm.
I don't think that Lily Rose Depp did anything wrong. I think she's great in the movie. In fact, much better than I expected. Now, it's weird because I have seen one or two people online being like, oh, she was terrible, but not a lot. Like, for the most part, it's been praise. I've also seen one or two people online complaining about Aaron Taylor Johnson in this movie. And again,
don't get it at all.
I thought he was fine. You know, I don't get it. I almost wonder if that's not piling on for Craven, which I'm not holding Craven against him when I'm not holding Craven against him when he's done so much other stuff in his career.
I thought I saw more humor in this movie than I was expecting. And yes, it's bleak, and yes, it's very, oppressively dark and shrouded in this kind of evil presence. But like, there's some definite gallows humor in it. And I thought at times Aaron Taylor Johnson's character and Willem Dafoe as the, not Van Helsing, the other guy, both of their characters brought something like levity to the film, and I actually appreciated that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, it's also interesting how many, like, weirdly, how many Marvel villains are in this movie. Like, it has nothing to do with anything else, but you got Willem Dafoe, you got Aaron Taylor Johnson, you got, is it Ralph Isaacson? Is that how you pronounce it? The doctor who is going to be Galactus in the forthcoming Fantastic Four movie. And then you got, her name has just gone out of my head, or their name. They're non-binary, but the actor who was Aaron Taylor Johnson's wife, that's Cassandra Nova from Deadpool and Wolverine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's funny. I didn't even put that together. She's very good, or they're very good in it as well. Like, the cast is just uniformly really good, but it feels emotionally isolating, and that's really unfortunate and something that I hope he can work on and kind of improve in his next couple of films, because all of those that he's done so far are just top tier and intellectually really engaging. But like, every once in a while, you just wish like a Steven Spielberg would step in and be like, this is how you make schmaltzy stuff that makes people feel something, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't want it to go too much that way either. You know,
no,
what I mean? Like, there's stuff that I like about what Eggers does that is the antithesis of that. And it's not that I don't love Spielberg, because I do. Spielberg is one of the greatest filmmakers that ever lived. But I don't want to see Robert Eggers making E.T. I don't think that works on either end. I don't think it works for the source material, and I don't think it works for his strengths.
No.
So, you know, I'm kind of like, I love his style. And I do think this movie succeeds on all the style standpoints. It's a gorgeous looking movie. Count Orlok is creepy as hell. Props to Skarsgård. Just, you know, fantastic in the role. And like I said, I thought Lily Rose Depp was fantastic. The Nicholas Holt was fantastic. He's always great. And another Marvel character, albeit not a villain, because he was the Beast in the more recent X-Men movies, and going to be Lex Luthor next year, going over to the DC universe.
Eventually, they'll have everyone.
Well, yeah, I mean, kind of. Yeah, that's pretty much where we're at. But, you know, it's the flip side of that is it raises actors' profiles, and then they get to do stuff like this.
Sure.
So, you know, it kind of works both ways. But
I'm going 4 out of 5 as far as my, like, quantified. This is my rating of Nosferatu. I can't recommend it enough. I just kind of what we've both touched on at the beginning is like, when you hype something up so much in your mind, the inevitable, even it not living up to those standards sounds like a ding against it. And that's unfortunate, because it's really not. It's more my expectations versus what I ended up getting.
Oh yeah. I don't disagree with you at all on that. I mean, I think you're probably right. I think probably 4 out of 5 is where I'd put the movie as well. But I expected it to be a 5 out of 5. So it feels disappointing, even though it's not really. And I kind of wonder, you know, along the same lines, you know, that's also kind of the way I felt about Baby Girl, which I know you haven't seen, but there was a lot of hype about the performances in that movie, and they're very good, but like, the movie just didn't quite connect with me the way I wanted it to. And so I walked away like with it being, you know, it's just not one that I think is going to stick with me the way that I expected it to. I think this sticks with me a little longer. Like, I would see Nosferatu again. It's going to be on some IMAX screens this weekend, and I'm kind of considering, do I want to go see it in IMAX? It'd be cool to look at that in IMAX, but I don't know whether I'm ready to watch it again yet. Like, I don't know whether I don't need, you know, a year or so before I'm ready to watch it again.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's a weird situation that it's a good movie that I recommend, but I don't know that I'm ready to sit down and watch it again versus, you know, like, I've seen Deadpool and Wolverine twice. Like I would, you know, run out to see Wicked again or A Complete Unknown again, or, you know, The Substance, or, you know, several of the other movies that, you know, made my top 10 this year would be something that I would be very happy to sit down again. And, you know, it brings to mind something else I was thinking about, Jeremy. I've seen a lot of my past year-end lists popping up on Facebook in the last week because, you know, looking back at the memories as they pop back up. It'd be interesting to go back and look at those lists again and see what still stands up versus what I haven't thought about since I made that list. But, you know, that's something to think about for a future show. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Sorry that the chairs are all worn. I left them here, I could have sworn. These are my salad days, slowly being eaten away. Just another play for today. Oh, but I'm proud of you, but I'm proud of you. Nothing left to make me feel small. So you've got the power.
is Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, we're already into award season. It's here. Here we are, the first weekend in January, and this Sunday is the Golden Globe Awards. We did talk about these awards somewhat when the nominations came out a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago at this point, where we went through the nominees for the Best Picture Drama and Best Picture Comedy or Musical. I'll real quick run down those again, but we're not going to discuss these in depth again. Best Drama nominations for The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, Conclave, Dune Part 2, Nickel Boys, and September 5. Best Comedy or Musical nominations for Anora, Challengers, Amelia Perez, A Real Pain, The Substance, and Wicked. Before we get too much, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the acting nominations, some of the TV nominations, because the Globes also do TV as well as movies. But I'm excited about this award show in particular for the first time in a while. And that's because of the host, Nikki Glaser. Mm. I am really looking forward to seeing Nikki Glaser hosting the Globes.
Yeah, she had her moment in the sun after the roast of Tom Brady, and finally people started to put respect on her name, because for old heads like myself and you, she goes all the way back to the roasts on Comedy Central and has had several specials, and she's consistently very funny and very good, and I do think she's going to bring that good mix of both taking shots while also being supportive of the community.
Yeah, I think so too. She had a great special last year too, which I think is actually nominated, because there is a comedy special category at the Globes, and I think her special is nominated if I remember correctly. She's hilarious. I do think that she's going to bring the right tone of irreverence here. Like, I don't think she'll be quite, she'll be mean, but it'll be like in a fun way. Like, I don't think she'll be quite as, like, I don't think it'll be taken the quite the same way Ricky Gervais was taken. But Ricky Gervais was a lot of fun as a host. So I that in and of itself, you know, I'm excited about. The Globes have always been kind of dubious, and they've been in the last couple of years trying to repair that image, where the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, which used to give these awards away, has been 86. It doesn't exist anymore. Dick Clark Productions bought out the award show, and they seem to have a little bit more substance behind the nominations now. And I think it shows. I think that this is the first year in a while where I feel like the Globes really are, I think, a fair estimation of what we might see coming up in the Oscar race. So,
do you like that? I mean, it sounds like it does, but I wonder. Like, I kind of wish that things were less funneled through one lens of assessment. And while I totally respect and even in some ways agree with the fact that it was like, who's picking these winners when it was strictly the Hollywood Foreign Press? But if everybody's getting the same award, then like, what are we,
yeah,
what are we doing?
I get what you're saying. I don't like it when it gets to where there's no surprises on Oscar night. But I think that on the other hand, there absolutely still can be surprises on Oscar night. And here's the evidence that I will cite for you. Remember a couple of years ago when they switched up the order of the awards, and instead of giving Best Picture at the end of the night, they gave away Best Actor at the end of the night? Because everybody was so sure that it was going to be this big emotional moment where they gave it to Chadwick Boseman, who had just passed away. And then it went to Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Chadwick Boseman had won every award leading up to it. The voters are still going to vote, and it could still go a different way. You know, another great example is a couple years ago when everybody thought La La Land was going to win Best Picture. And in fact, it was accidentally announced that La La Land had won Best Picture. And it turned out that no, in fact, Moonlight had won Best Picture. So, you know, I think it gets to a certain sense of predictability. But I think there's always room for an upset.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. I agree.
So, I mean, just we're going to hammer through these real quick because we don't have a lot of time left in the show. But Best Actor in a Drama nominations, Adrian Brody for The Brutalist, Timothy Chalamet for A Complete Unknown, Daniel Craig for Queer, Coleman Domingo for Sing Sing, Ralph Fiennes for Conclave, and Sebastian Stan for The Apprentice. Haven't gotten to see a couple of these movies here yet. For me right now, it's between Chalamet and Fiennes. And like, I kind of give the edge to Chalamet. Chalamet really disappears into the role of Bob Dylan.
I'm giving it to Adrian Brody, having not seen the movie.
Well, I mean, I mean, he's probably going to be well in contention for a lot of these. That's a given. Lead actress in a drama, Pamela Anderson for The Last Showgirl. First of all, do you ever think you'd see Pamela Anderson nominated for Best Actress in a Drama Film? But we got
pretty
that. Angelina Jolie for Maria, Nicole Kidman for Baby Girl, Tilda Swinton for The Room Next Door, Fernando Torres for I'm Still Here, and Kate Winslet for Lee. The interesting thing about this to me is, like, I see maybe one of those, maybe two, making it into the Oscar category. Like, Oscar's going to be a much stronger category for comedy musical actresses this year than it is for drama actresses. That being the case, like, the only one of these I've seen is Baby Girl. So by default, I'd have to give it to Kidman, but it's an interesting category.
Yeah, no strong takes on that one, having not seen any of those.
Yeah. Actor in a comedy or musical, Jesse Eisenberg for A Real Pain, Hugh Grant for Heretic, Gabriel LaBelle for Saturday Night, Jesse Plemons for Kinds of Kindness, Glenn Powell for Hitman, and Sebastian Stan for A Different Man. This is another one where I think we're going to see maybe one or maybe two of these get into the Oscar race. And both of these are kind of an outside chance. Like, Jesse Eisenberg has an outside chance of getting in. Hugh Grant has an outside chance of getting in. They've gotten, you know, a lot of praise. Eisenberg, I think, is going to be recognized at the Oscars for screenwriting because he wrote this movie. He also directed it. I don't think he's going to get a director nomination. But the real focus on that movie has been the supporting act, because Kieran Culkin, even though they're kind of co-leads, Kieran Culkin is going for supporting. And I think Kieran Culkin's got a damn good chance of winning that award.
Sure.
I mean, right now, again, of these movies, the only ones I've seen are A Real Pain and Saturday Night. So I would lean towards Eisenberg. But did you have a take there?
Same. No, I was going to say the exact same thing. I'm leaning towards Eisenberg.
Okay. Best actress in a comedy or musical, you've got Amy Adams for Night Bitch, which I understand just dropped on Hulu, so I'm going to be watching that very soon. Been looking forward to that. Cynthia Erivo for Wicked, Carla Sofia Gascon for Amelia Perez, who I believe is in for, no, she is in for lead. I'm sorry, for the Oscars as well. Mikey Madison for Anora, Demi Moore for The Substance, and Zendaya for Challengers. Now, this is the one where I've seen almost all of these performances. I haven't seen Amelia Perez or Night Bitch, but I've seen the other four. Mikey Madison, man. As good as Demi Moore is, I love Demi Moore in The Substance. I love Cynthia Erivo in Wicked. But Mikey Madison is the lock for this.
Yeah, totally agree.
You still haven't gotten a chance to see Anora, have you?
No, dude, I just got my finger on the pulse. That's all I'm saying. I've got no intelligent insight to give on the majority of these, but I'm going off my gut, and I agree with you.
Okay.
You got a good gut too, sir.
All right. Good deal. Well, I'm going to skip over to the TV awards since we really have focused on the movie. Best drama series, The Day of the Jackal, The Diplomat, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Shogun, Slow Horses, and Squid Game. Now, Squid Game, because the eligibility period is so weird for the Globes, we're talking Squid Game season two here, which just dropped. Versus, like, if we were talking about the Emmys, it would take a year for that to be up for nominations. But I mean, isn't this going to go to Shogun?
I hope so. That's one that I've seen, and I think it would be the absolute, that's the one I would like to see. And I feel like it has a lot of momentum behind it because it's just a beautifully produced show.
Best comedy or musical series, Abbott Elementary, The Bear, The Gentleman, Hacks, Nobody Wants This, and Only Murders in the Building. Now, I would have sworn up and down that The Bear was going to win this, but then Hacks came in and played spoilers at the Emmys last season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is going to be for season three of The Bear, where the Emmys were for season two of The Bear, versus Hacks, it's still season three for both of them. So do you have a take here?
Season 3 is not the strongest season of The Bear. I love that show, and I feel like the Hacks has the momentum behind it. I think you might be onto something with that.
Okay. And then best limited or anthology series or TV movie, Baby Reindeer, Disclaimer, Monsters, the Lyle and Eric Menendez story, The Penguin, Ripley, and True Detective Night Country. This is a very competitive
category.
Don't
put those against each other. I hate this because there are two that I would love to see win.
Extremely competitive category, but I still feel like my gut, like, I'll be honest, the only one of these I've watched is The Penguin, and I really want it to win. It's an amazing series.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like all the buzz is on Baby Reindeer.
Yeah, this is so tough because they are both so incredible. Watched both of them. Love both of them. It's got to be Baby Reindeer. It's something we have never seen before in a way that The Penguin isn't. I like The Penguin better, but yeah, it's Baby Reindeer.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out on Sunday, and we'll talk to you back here next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.